This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Belinsky.
And Jennifer Renee.
And Brian Erickson.
And Glenn Holt.
And on tonight's show...
Well, if I can get the script back, thank you. on tonight's show, it's kind of rare these days to be a Democratic judge in Texas, even more so to be gay. Judge Steve Kirkland will visit with Jack and Brian about his role as an openly gay judge in Harris County. PFLAG has a scholarship program, and we'll be talking about that with some PFLAG folks later in the hour. And in the next hour, news wrap from This Way Out and Barbara Howard from AVER, American Veterans for Equal Rights, will be here to talk about their outreach to Houston GLBT veterans and about access to local VA services. Yes, Virginia, there are gays and lesbians in the military. And up next, David Elliott from Washington, D.C., with his Inside the Beltway and Beyond report, and a look at what's next after the Iowa caucuses from a GLBT perspective.
Yes, and we'll have David very shortly, and actually he'll probably talk a little bit about what's going on in the Supreme Court, because I'm sure that's of interest to him and to our audience also. It is our first show of the new year.
Yes, happy new year to everyone out there.
We were here for
New Year's Eve.
New Year's Eve, yes. We were. We had a great time here, and Christmas Eve. And I think this year they'll probably move us to Thursday to track with those holidays.
So we can just track the holidays.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
We're the only ones that really show up live.
We do live shows on holidays. So it definitely keeps us busy. Deborah's a little bit under the weather, so she's not here this evening. And she'll probably be back next week. We have a lot of things coming up in the new year for shows and a lot of new people helping out with shows. So I'm excited about that. Good evening, David. How are you?
Well, good evening, Jack. How are you this evening?
Well, I am just a little bit surprised, I think, of what's going on.
Well, my God, my God, my God. You know, I have a little story to tell you.
Okay.
I was walking back to my office this afternoon in Washington, D.C. I was actually coming from the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yes, I was going to ask you about that.
Well,
Did you meet Nina?
I was lucky enough to get a seat inside the court today when they heard an important death case. But we'll talk about that another time.
Okay.
That's
no,
not
well,
important
we can
tonight.
We could talk about that a little bit at the end.
Well, you know, there's so much to bring you tonight, Jack.
Okay.
So much.
Okay.
I was walking back to my office and I saw something fairly incredible for Washington, D.C. The first week of January. People were sitting outside in the parks and in cafes eating lunch. The temperature was in the upper 60s. I had to take my sweater off. It was so warm. And people were eating lunch outside in Washington, frigid Washington, in January. And, you know, I thought to myself, the day that it is in the upper 60s in Washington in January is the day that America elects a... Oh, I'm not going to go there. But it's that incredible. And Jack, let me ask you a question. And you know, I don't want to age you here. But I know that you, like me, at least partly grew up in the 1960s, right?
Well, I actually do remember the inauguration of John F. Kennedy on TV.
Well, okay, then you predate me a little bit, because I think I was, actually I wasn't born yet, okay? But you remember a group that preceded Crosby, Stills, and Nash, right? A group, I think, by the name of Buffalo Springfield?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Wonderful group.
And they had a song that started out, there's something happening here, what it is ain't exactly clear. I won't try to sing it because I'm a terrible singer, but you remember that, right?
Yes, absolutely.
That's For What It's Worth.
Okay, people, for what it's worth, there's something huge that is overtaking the United States tonight. And it hasn't been just the past 4 days or so since Iowa. It's been happening for months and months, if not for years. you know that I came on this program last September and predicted that Barack Obama would be the Democratic nominee. The mainstream media did not know that and have treated Hillary Clinton, who's run a very strong campaign. She's had the best advisors, you know, in the most veteran advisors, and she's got a very dedicated following. She's run a strong campaign. But tonight in Iowa, now in New Hampshire, and now for the first time we see across the United States with a new poll just out today, her presidential campaign is crumbling. First, let's back up a little bit, okay? Probably all of your listeners know that last Thursday, during the first caucusing, the first actual voting in the 2008 presidential race, on the Democratic side, Barack Obama won a strong victory by about 7 percentage points or so, if I'm not mistaken. John Edwards and Hillary Clinton essentially tied for second. I know it's been reported that Edwards got second and Hillary got third, but let's be honest here. There were only about 3/10 of a percentage point apart from each other, only a matter of several hundred votes. Now we have a national poll out, came out late this afternoon, showing Obama with 33%, Clinton with 33%, Edwards with 20%. This is the first time. Well, wait a minute, let me back up. Not only is this the first time that Obama and Clinton have been tied nationally, but there has never been another national poll out there that even had Obama within single digits of Hillary. Every other national poll to this date had Hillary up by double digits, sometimes as many as 20 or 25 points. That is an indication of how quickly Obama is taking off and how quickly Hillary is sliding. Now, your listeners might also know that New Hampshire comes tomorrow with the nation's first in the nation primary. Excuse me, I'm so excited reporting on this. I can barely get a sentence out. The voting starts in New Hampshire tomorrow. They've got the first primary. Actually, the voting starts about 4 hours from now in this little town up by the Canadian border called Dixville Notch, but we don't need to worry about that too much. So what is going to happen in New Hampshire tomorrow? Well, the polls are all over the place, but every one of them is now forecasting an Obama victory. The only question is how large. I've been crunching the numbers. There's one poll that I found that I respect a whole lot, that has Obama at 39%, Hillary at 29%, Edwards at 19%, Bill Richardson polling about 5%. This has a number of undecided voters, and if we know anything about undecided voters, we know that they break toward the front runner. So, at the end of the day tomorrow, what we can expect is Obama is going to get somewhere in the mid-40s. Hillary will finish somewhere in the low 30s. So Obama is headed for somewhere in the neighborhood of a 13, 14, 15-point win. Edwards will be around 20, Richardson around 5%. That's what's happening on the Democratic side. I want to talk very briefly.
Well, let me just ask you this, though.
Sure.
I mean, the state of New Hampshire has a population of about 1.2 million people. That's about 60% of the population of Houston. So this is just, you know, the first primary. And I know the momentum is probably with Obama, but, you know, there's still a long way to go.
There is, you know, procedurally, there is a long way to go. But I'll tell you, Jack, if you look at the primary schedule and everything that happens between now and February 5th, when approximately 22 states are going to be voting on you know, what we have come to call Super Duper Tuesday, because there's never ever been a day in American history when so many states were voting in primaries on the same day. If you look at the compressed schedule and everything that has happened, it would take a rather colossal gaffe on Obama's part, or a shifting of the campaign narrative, the story narrative, in order for Hillary, or for that matter, Edwards, to really mount a formidable challenge to Obama. And in fact, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say something that might surprise you a little bit. I think that Hillary will actually end up withdrawing from the presidential campaign before John Edwards. I think we will eventually come to see a two-person race between John Edwards and Barack Obama.
Wow.
Now, let me jump over to the Republicans briefly, okay? But then I want to get back a little bit to this whole Obama thing and what's happening with party politics today. Your listeners know that former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee basically came out of nowhere to win the Iowa caucus last week. Well, what's going to happen in New Hampshire tomorrow? Just like the Democrats, where we basically already know that Obama's going to win, Hillary's going to get second, Edwards third, and Richardson fourth, we also pretty much know the order of the top five finishers, well, for that matter, the top seven finishers on the GOP side. John McCain is going to eke out a victory over Mitt Romney, whose candidacy is in serious, serious trouble. Mike Huckabee is going to rise to third place. He's already polling at 14%, and he's going up every single day. Rudy Giuliani and Ron Paul are going to be fighting it out for fourth and fifth place. Fred Thompson will come in sixth, and then the other guy who nobody's really paying any attention to, Duncan Hunter, will get last place. So, and this is a theme I want to share with you. The Democrats could wrap this thing up really quickly. At the same time, the Republican primary race continues to descend into utter chaos, with no front runner pulling out yet. And I want to share something with you anecdotally, because this is a theme that I'm beginning to see emerge that could be the prevailing theme of the 2008 presidential election. I'm sitting at home on Saturday afternoon watching C-SPAN. Okay, I admit it. I'm a little bit weird. I'm a little bit of a geek, but I'm watching the campaign going on C-SPAN, right? And they're letting Democrats call in on a Democratic phone line, and independents call in on an independent phone line, and Republicans call in on a Republican phone line. You've seen C-SPAN. You know how that works. Well, okay, maybe you haven't seen C-SPAN. No, but
we understand. Yeah.
Republicans were calling in throughout the afternoon, 50-year-old Republicans, 60-year-old Republicans, and they were telling the commentator who was taking their calls that they had never voted Republican in their life, but they don't like the people in their party who are running. They don't like the other Democrats who are running. Maybe they don't care so much for John Edwards. They particularly don't like Hillary Clinton, but they like this guy Barack Obama, because he says he can bring the country together, and they believe that. And so I was listening to this not once, not twice, but over and over and over again. And to back that up with a little bit of science, the polling is showing Barack Obama taking a huge number of independent votes and a not insignificant number of Republican votes. We are talking about a guy, and I don't want to get too over exuberant here because it is early in the process, but I'm telling you, we're talking about a guy who in November could win more than 40 states.
Well, we also got to remember too that the Republicans get out their mean machine, and we know how dirty they play, number one. Number two, we know that in 2004 they stole Ohio, and in 2000 they stole Florida. So unless the Democrats win by a big margin, they could still steal it.
Well, you know, Jack, the Seminole Indians really want Florida back. Seriously. No, you're right, and there will be a Republican attack machine. But if your brand is damaged as severely as the Republican brand is damaged right now, mm-hmm. and if you go up against a guy who is running to unite the country and is trying to practice, as Mike Huckabee said when he was actually on TV praising Obama the other night, Republican Huckabee, you're running against a guy who is trying to practice vertical politics, build everybody up, instead of horizontal politics, tear everybody down, you know, across the party aisle, then that attack is not going to be quite as effective as it was throughout the 1990s, and certainly in 2004 when Democratic nominee John Kerry got totally and completely swift-voted by Karl Rove and George W. Bush et al.
Yes, and Karl Rove can, you know, he can veer his ugly head, you know, again. And it is important, as the national vote is for president, it's also very important to get, and we're going to, in our next segment, we're going to be talking about a judge up for running for an election. It's important all the way down the ballot.
It's bottom up. We know that presidential races have a top-down effect. We also know that Barack Obama has the potential to bring millions and millions of new voters to the polls, millennial voters, young voters, particularly single women, also of all ages. But we also know that grassroots organizing and get-out-the-vote efforts begin at home. They begin bottom-up. They begin, for instance, with the efforts of the Houston Gay and Lesbian Political Caucus, right, to get its members out and registered. They begin city by city, precinct by precinct. So, yeah, that's critically important. And Jack, don't you have next month, I believe, don't you have voter registration deadlines coming up?
Yes, it will be February 4th because we have a primary on March 4th. And it's going to be real interesting because, it's possible the presidential race may still be in play. And we have somebody, Rick Noriega, who's going to be running against U.S. Senator Cornyn.
Oh, and, you know, I just want to give you an early heads up, Jack.
Please do.
That U.S. Senate race is going to be a lot more competitive than people think.
Well, we hope so, yes.
And you heard it here first. Cornyn may lose.
Well, it's going to take a lot of work. It's definitely going to take a lot of work. Well, and briefly, David, tell us what you were in the Supreme Court for today.
Well, Jack, today the U.S. Supreme Court, actually for the first time in history, heard an argument on whether or not lethal injection executions constitute cruel and unusual punishment. And I won't go into all of the arguments. We don't really have time to do that. But it was a good occasion because it gave us yet another chance to talk about how the death penalty is really a flawed and broken public policy, a broken government policy.
Absolutely.
A broken government program. And, you know, this means a lot to your listeners because, for one thing, you know, death row in Texas isn't too far from where you're broadcasting from. For another thing, the death penalty in Texas has discriminated against a lot of people in Harris County on the basis of economics, on the basis of race. And, you know, we now know that the prosecutor who was one of the most zealous prosecutors in the entire United States when it came to pursuing the death penalty no matter what is on his way out of office, I guess because of some shenanigans involving a secretary.
Yes, some emails that came public.
Yes, and you can't make that stuff up. It was just so good. And that happened around the holidays of the, you know, New Year's. And
I have to tell you, I didn't learn about it until two or three days after. It happened because I wasn't quite as diligent as I usually am in checking my email. And I saw it, and my jaw dropped.
Yes, yes. Well, and, you know, of course, some of us sort of wish he was still in the race because that would be a lot of fun, running somebody against him. And especially, well, you know, he's also the person who took the 2106 case to try to defend it at the Supreme Court. And as somebody says, aren't we lucky that he was so incompetent?
Well, yes. And, of course, you're referring to, you know, the landmark historic sodomy case.
Yes,
where
yes.
the U.S. Supreme Court struck down anti-gay, anti-bisexual sodomy statutes as being unconstitutional.
Right, for the entire country.
Right, right. And so, in a way, maybe we should be saying, thank you, Chuck Rosenthal.
Yes, yes. Well, David,
for his gifts,
what do you do for your day job, as we were just talking about?
Well, Jack, for my day job, I'm the communications director of the National Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty. You can find our website at www.ncadp.org. Again, that's ncadp.org. Or you can look at our blog at www.deathpenaltyusa.blogspot.com. And before I go, Jack, I want to wish you a happy new year. I want to wish your listeners a really happy new year. And I do want to predict that Obama is going to be looking at a very, very substantial victory in New Hampshire tomorrow evening.
Well, David Elliott joins us on the first Monday of every month and gives us some very good analysis of what's going on nationally. David, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Jack.
And thank you're you. Listening to Queer Voices.
When we were young, we knew we were different. We didn't know how or why. And as we grew up, we found what was different was only our dreams and desires. But we learned the names that they had for us. We prayed they would never discover us. And as we waited silently, quietly, we learned them, silently, quietly, we learned them, oh, we learned them. How could we just believe what they said? Could we see our beauty instead? How could we get it into our heads? If we were not good enough, we were not good enough.
from the 1999 album The Living Dead that was scot-free, not good enough. This is Queer Voices.
Welcome back to Queer Voices. This is Brian Erickson, and I'm sitting here today with Judge Steve Kirkland. He is currently one of the City of Houston Municipal Courts judges, and he is running for the 215th Civil District Court. Steve, as one of the few openly gay judges and are Democrats to serve in Harris County, tell us a bit about yourself.
Well, hi, Brian. Good to be with you tonight. I was appointed back in 2001. My friend Denise Parker was on council at the time, and the mayor needed her vote, and this was a doable spot for gay people to gain another seat at the table. You know, we've been fighting a long time for that, and Anise was one of our courageous early winners. And Anise also looked at ways to expand the pool of gay talent that's serving in government, and municipal courts was an available spot. John Paul Barnish preceded me as the first openly gay judge in the City of Houston, actually in the state of Texas, and then I joined shortly thereafter, making me the second openly gay judge in the state of Texas. We currently have one other down there. Barbara Harbel has joined us recently. And we have an elected gay judge up in Austin now. Judge Steed is a JP up in the Austin area. So we're very... Our numbers are growing, but we're still very, very small and in our percentage and our places at the table.
What about John Paul?
John Paul is serving as a parking parking judge, for lack of a better term. He's a hearing officer in the parking administration now, which is actually where I started. So, which was a fun.
And I remember that.
And you remember that. Yes, you do.
It's nice seeing you here in the studio of Queer Voices rather than being in front of you with the ticket in my hand.
Yes, it is. It's much happier to see you here. You know, one of the fun things about the job is I get to see lots and lots of people that I see out and about in real life, in daily life, as well as lots of different people that I wouldn't otherwise get to see. So I meet a lot of interesting people that way and get to look at life through probably 200 different pairs of eyes a day, which is the truly exciting part about this job. You know, when people come to courts, they're usually on their best behavior, dealing with some of their worst behavior. So it's an interesting dichotomy. They come in with their foibles, as it were, and then they're trying to dress themselves up to make it less problematic. So it's a fun way, or an interesting way, to get to know them. And so, yeah.
So why are you running? Why are you running? Are you trying to advance your career?
It's time.
It's time?
It's time. Yes, I'm trying to advance my career. Absolutely. No question about that. I actually have a passion for justice, and I've had that for a long time. I started all my adult life. It's been, that shouldn't be that way, and we should do something to fix that. And every time I turned around, there was something legal about it. So from college days, I kept running into the law as part of the way to fix things.
Well, as Phyllis was talking about at the last caucus meeting, that, you know, basically one party has all the judgeships in Harris County, and she doesn't always feel that these judges are as fair as they should be.
I don't get down to the courthouse often. Actually, I don't get down to that courthouse at all. I have my own courthouse, and I'm there all the time. So I don't get down to that one. So I don't get to see that. But my sense is that it's an echo chamber, that folks are either trying to outright each other on trying to be more conservative, more solicitous of business interest, corporate interest, or in the criminal courthouse trying to be more mean. They're trying to outmean each other. And that's my sense of it. Now, I'm looking from the outside, looking towards them, so that may not be a fair, completely fair assessment. But,
and it's probably easier for me to say something like that than you.
Right. But I also am a partisan. I am a Democrat, and they're all Republicans, and they can wear that badge.
Right, but once you become judge, you sort of shed that whether you're Democrat or Republican.
You know, there is no Democratic justice and there is no Republican justice. There's no gay justice. There's no straight justice. There's just justice. And that's what I've had a passion for, as I said, all my life.
Why now?
Why now? Now is the time that it seems possible. I am a strong advocate of tilting at windmills when they need to be tilted at. I'm a strong advocate of picking your battles as well when it's appropriate. Now, running for office for the sake of running for office is not a windmill that I'm willing to tilt at. I don't think that's an appropriate thing to do for everybody. Some people do it very well, and some people are appropriate for doing that, and there are times when it's appropriate. But this year, I think it's a viable option. I think it's an appropriately viable option, and I'm the type of candidate that it's viable for because I have public stature already as a judge, and because it's the time for change. I was listening a little bit to your earlier session, and I was hearing quite a bit about change, and I have seen that talk of change, the feel for change, the demand for change is coming from all over. I've been in groups where there are Republicans who are saying, I'm tired of this. I'm fed up with the stuff that's going on in Washington. Usually they refer to it as the lies. I'm tired of the intolerance and the bigotry that comes out of Austin. I'm tired of the heavy-handedness that comes from the folks that are entrenched in power in Austin. And they're tired of what they see here in Harris County, which is a one-sided courthouse. They think it needs to be opened up.
Well, especially as we just saw with the DA and him not understanding that, you know, the internal email system is public property, and the hypocrisy of talking about how the moral values is of the Republican Party when we just find out that, you know, they don't live up to it.
Any time a partisan gets to live with his own rhetoric or to be subjected to his own rhetoric, I think is probably appropriate. As a semi-public figure myself, I would hate to see my own foibles posted across the front page of the newspaper. Certainly don't want anybody to see me in my bathrobe or anything like that. So I feel for the man that his private life is being made public in such a dramatic way.
Well, but he was also using the county email system for his private,
which is something he should not have been doing, right. And I think it's appropriate that he be called out on that.
And you have first of all, KPFT does not endorse candidates. You have an opponent in the primary.
I do. A gentleman named Fred Cook. He's a precinct judge and a litigator of some time here in the city. Which means he's not to be dismissed lightly. I do have expect to have a vigorous campaign going. In fact, I've been campaigning very hard. I've been to all parts of this county. I've been to Kingwood, to Clear Lake, Cypress, to Baytown, Pleasantville, to Sunnyside, and all points in between, visiting with folks. I've been to churches. I've been to civic clubs. I've been to Democratic clubs. I am out there pushing the information, pushing the campaign every step of the way. So it's going to be a vigorous campaign.
And you're seeking the endorsement of the Houston GLBT Political Caucus.
Absolutely. I'm actually already endorsed by the Victory Fund, so I'm very excited about that. And I will be seeking the GLBT's endorsement. And I expect to get it. Almost my entire adult life, I've been a member and participant in the caucus, so it's kind of my home group, and I'm looking forward to, as it were, coming home at the next endorsement meeting. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to spend as much time with my friends by trying to reach out to group new friends. So if you've been missing me at the caucus meeting, that's because I've been in places like A-Leaf and Baytown.
Well, it's a big county.
It is a huge county.
Third largest in the country.
Yeah, it was really amazing to me when I went to Pasadena and met with the folks out there, the Area 5 Democrats. It was like also, in a way, it was an old homecoming session because there were people there I hadn't seen in probably 20 years.
Are you from Houston?
No, I grew up out in West Texas.
Okay.
I grew up out in West Texas, but I went to school here in Houston at Rice University, and then did my law degree at University of Houston. I was working during the day while I was doing that. But during all of that time, I was actually involved in Democratic politics. I started in Democratic politics at Rice in 1980 with Paul Colbert's campaign. And met a lot of folks back then and got...
State Representative, yeah.
State Representative Colbert.
Well, and you're also involved in the 6th Ward area?
I am a longtime resident of the 6th Ward. One of the folks that started, I guess not really started, but helped push along the renaissance of the 6th Ward and been pushing for historic preservation regs over there, which we just got this past year.
Which is almost anti-Houston in a sense. But
it's amazing the number of people that have connections to the 6th Ward and really want to see that area preserved. You see it, I go to get A-Leaf, I see it in Baytown, I see it. In the Highlands, I was visiting with some folks out in Highlands, Texas, which is across the river, across the San Jacinto River. And they were like, oh, wow, yeah, you guys down in the 6th Ward, you got that saved. And it's like, you hear about that out here and you care about that out here. Oh, yeah, we did. So, yeah, I've been active in that community for a long time as well.
And that's really sort of interesting because it's so hard because of the city's so big to build community. You know, we all get in our cars and we drive across the city, and but to try to build community and in fact we're having that problem within the GLBT community right now because we're so spread out and we don't have a newspaper anymore, and that's sort of a recurring theme that I talk about.
Yeah, the reaching out and finding each other so that you can build community. And that is an interesting problem, and we do that now, and we're doing that now in some other interesting ways. I know Anise Parker's campaign has helped us to bridge the gap with ourselves, to find ourselves at places. It also helps us to find communities of common interest that we can build on as well. We're also building different types of communities, such as what we've done in the 6th Ward, which is where we all came together out of a love of an architectural style and perhaps a neighborhood layout. And then we discover there's all kinds of other interesting things about each other that we like a lot as well, so that builds community in a different way. Now, the 6th Ward is one of those unique areas where we can do that. And I suspect there are other neighborhoods that are doing that as well. In fact, I was visiting with young man from Cyprus, John Brewer, who grew up out there, and then he came out there, and he still lives out there, and he's the head of their Democratic Club out there, and he is finding a great deal of acceptance of he and his partner as just another family in the community there. So we're making some interesting inroads and some dynamic inroads, I think, that make our communities broader and different, so that what you and I came out with, which was...
Well, absolutely, and I was a little bit involved in the Washington Avenue parade last year, and it was real interesting to see how, you know, you're definitely accepted in that community as part of it, and you were a judge for that parade.
I was.
Just, you know, what a coincidence.
They thought that was cute.
Yes, but it's really neat that, you know, as we get involved and we have interest in our communities, that we're accepted because we play a vital part in preserving and trying to bring the, you know, build a community up, and we want the same things everybody else wants.
One of the reasons that I have such acceptance in the Washington Avenue area is my role in developing Avenue CDC, the Community Development Corporation. So it's interesting you should bring up community, because I've got some 20 years of building community just through that organization alone, reaching out to my neighbors there. I remember the first time I went into the 1st Ward and met Cleola Williams, who's an activist over there and been an activist forever. And a beautiful, lovely black woman who sang at my kickoff celebration, as a matter of fact. You met her there. And she looked at me then like, what are you doing here? You know, why are you in my neighborhood? And I don't think I really want you here, because... her experience with, you know, white gay boys up until that time either were the ones that sang with her in the choir or played the organ or some music with her, or they're the ones that came in and stole the property from the neighbors. And I wasn't either one of those. I'm tone deaf, so, you know, you give me a bucket to carry my tune. And I wasn't stealing property. I was saying, we want to help you invest in the neighborhood so that we can keep lower income people in this neighborhood.
Well, that's a really interesting concept of Houston, and a problem with when a community gets developed and you can't afford to live in it anymore.
Right, right. And so we did a lot of development, both in terms of building community, but also in terms of building houses. I mean, we've put over 350 units of affordable housing on the ground along Washington Avenue and in the Neo North Side.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. This organization that I founded has done that.
And I really like Washington Avenue. First of all, it has a bike lane.
Yes.
You know, even though I don't live in the 6th Ward, I live in Montrose, but I ride my bike through downtown, and I know we're going completely off the subject, but there's actually a good reason for that, because this is all really important stuff, talking about community and building community. How interesting Washington Avenue is, and is it going to contain, you know, you're all trying to fight to keep the character of Washington Avenue there, which is a little bit of an uphill battle.
Well, character is something that's defined by each successive generation, and neighborhoods are something that's defined by each successive generation, and communities are constantly having to renew and regenerate themselves. And it's important that they do that. You need new investment.
Sure, sure.
It's also important that you honor and respect those that have come before you and try to make the change as possible or as even as possible so that when you create the new community, you have a broad spectrum of people that are there. We've done that to a degree in the 6th Ward, although it's not nearly as colorful as it used to be. It's not nearly as diverse economically as it used to be, but we have saved some out for the lower end, and we have kept some diversity in terms of the ethnic makeup as well. The First Ward, we've done some of that as well, and we did that by purchasing, if you will.
And I guess maybe we should explain, because just like in New York, you don't know what the IRT is and the BMT is, because these are terms that have been here forever, but if you're new to Houston, you don't know exactly where all the wards are.
The ward system is an interesting figment of our history. It used to be a political subdivision where Houston was divided into four, and two of the wards got split up into two more to create 6 wards, and that was the political subdivisions. We elected city council people from there, and in fact we elected the first black city council people from the first, fourth, and 6th wards back right after Reconstruction.
And now we have close to 700-800 precincts in Houston.
Right. So it's
in Harris County.
The politics have completely changed, but these neighborhoods have retained those names as the name of the neighborhood. So the 6th Ward is actually the one that runs northwest of downtown. The 1st Ward is just north of that. So if you were to take a pie of Buffalo Bayou and I-45, that would be the 6th and the 1st Wards would be going out that way till about Montrose, or Studemont, as it is called up there.
Before it comes Studiewood, yeah.
Yeah. You know, that wonderful way of changing names on the same street just because we want to.
Well, we were sort of separate communities in a long time.
Well, you're right, and that's exactly what happened as the communities grew together. And it's interesting that you bring it back to that, because that's what our community, our gay community, is doing with our neighboring communities. Is we're growing together, and we're becoming blended. And Houston is one of those wonderful cities that blends communities like no other city. In Chicago, I remember a visit up there, I was just amazed at the stark lines between the neighborhoods. You'd go from one line, and it was interesting, I was traveling with a black woman friend of mine, and we were driving through the streets, and we'd be going down the white neighborhoods, and they'd be looking at her, and then we'd cross the line, and then suddenly we were in the black neighborhoods, and they were all looking at me. And then we went over into UC, which is one of the diverse neighborhoods, and they were all like, y'all don't live here. So it was.
Yeah.
So you saw those lines in those cities, and this city here, you don't see those lines.
Yes, it's the good and bad about non-zoning is, you know,
it's all blurred.
Yeah,
it's all blurred, and to a degree, it's becoming all blended. And I think that's a great thing about the city, is that we are able to blend that way. And that is what's happening to our gay neighborhood. Montrose is not a gay neighborhood anymore. It's perhaps still the home of many of our institutions, but it's not a gay neighborhood.
So as we got completely off the subject here, but it was a very interesting conversation. You are running for judge in Harris County, and what district is it?
215th District Court. Now, anybody in Harris County can vote for me. In fact, everybody in Harris County needs to vote for me, but that's my last. I'm not supposed to be doing that on the air now, am I?
Well, we were just talking about your, and you're actively, very actively campaigning out there.
I am. I am all over the campaign. I'm all over the county.
If somebody wants some more information, do you have a website?
I do. www.kirklandforjudge.com. That's KirklandForJudge.com.
Okay. And I'm sure you're looking for volunteers.
Volunteers, money, and other opportunities to meet people.
Great. Well, Steve, thank you for joining us. And the election is on March 4th.
March 4th.
4th. And it is the Democratic primary.
The Democratic.
That you're running as a Democrat. And then the fall election is in November. Thank you for joining us this evening.
Thank you. Yes. When you go vote for president, remember there's someone else you want to vote for as well.
Yes.
And that's
Stephen
Kirkland.
You're listening to Queer Voices.
And stay tuned for News Wrap from This Way Out coming up in the next hour.
The best love girl runs into the world. She's laughing in my head and dancing in my dreams. Best love girl's like a fox on the hunt. She's who everybody wants, but she ever back on a no. But I love her, babe. And I love her more. And I'm the one who makes her the best love girl. Yeah. The best love girl takes a lot. She loves him with a smile and kills him with a touch. You know what she ever say? Yes, but she ever beg? I don't know. Not by you, maybe. Not by me. She's the one to choose. Decide what she'll be. But I love her best, and I love her more. And I.
one of the performers at this year's Houston's Women's Festival. That was Mary Cotrafello, Bring On the Night. And before that, Christy Claxton, Best Loved Girl. This is Queer Voices.
Well, we start a new year out, and there's a lot of activity going on in the community. One of the things that's happening this week is tomorrow evening is a Pride production meeting. If you're interested in getting involved in Pride, they're going to be meeting at 6 p.m. at their office, which is at 1415 California. It's one block north of Westheimer between Waugh and Commonwealth. And I know they're looking for volunteers to get involved because it's not that far away to the parade.
No, we're. Yes. I mean, volunteers is what drives the Pride internally. There's no one, you know, getting out there. If it's not the volunteers, it just won't happen. So it's your responsibility to get out there and volunteer with the Pride so that we'll have a good Pride parade this year.
Right, and it's not that far to hurricane season.
No, it's not.
And also, the caucus is looking for volunteers.
Yes.
We have an election coming up. What a surprise.
Yes, we were talking earlier, if you were listening, David Ellett was talking to us about the presidential election and what's going on there. But in addition to us electing a president, there's a lot of other positions, especially as we heard with Steve Kirkland, was that we've got local elections. And one of the things that the caucus does, which the caucus is your, for the GLBT community and the progressive community, a political arm to go out and do those things, help people get elected, needs volunteers. Volunteers of all kind. Now, if you don't like to stand at polls, there are plenty of places you can get on the phone. If you don't like making phone calls, you can just do data entry. Stuff envelopes. We don't lick stamps anymore, but you still stuff envelopes in many cases. So those things are always available. Volunteers, if you want to get involved in the political process, if you're not getting involved with a candidate and you want to work for our community, then, you know, call the caucus. You can go check on our website at thecaucus.org or give the caucus office a call.
And we've got some stuff coming up in for the AIDS Walk.
Yes, on Wednesday, the AIDS Walk kickoff party is being held at Tart Cafe and 4111 Montrose Art Galleries, starting at 4:30, going to 6:30. If you haven't attended the kickoff party, it's a lot of fun. You know, a lot of people talking, giving out information for AIDS Walk, drinks and food, nibbles, and just getting more information and getting ready for the big event for AIDS Walk. This is the 19th annual AIDS Walk.
Wow, 19 years. That's incredible.
How many participants do you usually have?
I think I've heard up to, and Julie Eberle, if you're out there, AIDS Foundation Houston, don't quote me, I think it's 14,000 to 15,000 they've had in the past. So if you've ever participated, it's just a mass of people down Allen Parkway. It just goes on forever.
There's a really good article in yesterday's New York Times, which you can get online, about the fact that, luckily, the people with AIDS are now aging, but unfortunately now they're starting to become susceptible to a lot of different diseases that they, you know, didn't think they'd live long enough to be.
It's kind of a double-edged sword.
Yes,
I mean, people
exactly.
are living longer, and you know they're aging, and these new diseases that, you know, they didn't expect, and I think it's a good thing. You know, people are living longer and getting to age and. You know?
And deal with all the other problems of aging. Yes, yes. And you should look that up. It's a really good article. There's a lot of things going on as we get into the new year. If you're interested in getting to talk about your organization, you can email us here. You can email me, in fact, jack@queervoices.org. And we're always looking to be able to put different people on from the community to talk about their organizations, because that's what the show's all about.
Yeah, and there's a lot of events coming up, if not in this month or next month, because there'll be a lot of politics going on, because we have a primary coming up March 4th. Also, get you need to register to vote if you're not registered to vote. And remember, if you have moved since the last time you voted, you're supposed to update your voter registration, or that you won't get your new card, and therefore you'll show up on election day and you won't be able to vote.
Right. They send out the cards every other year, and you should have gotten your card, or you should be getting your cards very shortly.
I got mine on Saturday's mail.
Yes, I got mine. Too. Okay. So, well, and they do not forward those cards.
No.
So what happens if you're still registered at your old address, the card goes there, and hopefully the person who's now living there will put it back out to the mail person. If they don't, then
you don't get it.
You don't get it, right. And if it goes back, then the county sort of puts you on a suspension list. But if you don't get it back, they think you still live there, and when you go to vote next time, you may not be able to vote.
Well, if you follow the rules, the state rules, then when you moved, you'll get your driver's license changed. And when you do, remember to check that box so that they register you to vote, and that'll get the system caught up with you. It'll also help there.
And it's very easy to get registered. Oh, you can go to harrisvotes.org.
I was just going to say that with a lot of activities in our community coming up in the spring, you know, let us know so we can put you on the schedule early enough to come in and talk about your event, because that's what we do here. Without our local paper anymore, that for our community is best to have an outlet for it, and that's what we do here at Queer Voices. We're the voice of the community when we don't have a paper that will echo our voice.
So, all that's coming up KPFT will be fundraising again.
Are we really?
Yes, can you imagine?
Get your money in now so we don't have to talk about it, okay?
That'll probably be coming up sometime in January. And the new Outsmart is out. There's some really good articles about what's going on.
There's a feature on JD.
Yes,
that's what I was going to say.
He's like a local celebrity now.
He is. JD. He's our celebrity here.
The other thing is, I didn't see you at it, but I know you were there at the inaugural for our city elected officials.
Yes, I was there. I sat right on the second row. I got a seat in the Niece Parker little section.
That was cold that day.
It was cold.
Freezing, I did not take this that opportunity to wear my one long leather coat, full length.
Yeah.
And so I sat there and froze.
I was sitting next to Cicely Lewin, and I didn't really recognize her because she was so bundled up. But I got to say, Jolanda Jones is probably the gayest person on city council because of her pink overcoat she was wearing.
Those of you who weren't there, everyone was dressed in dark clothes, very stately looking, and Jolanda, bless her heart, I just love her, shows up in a pink overcoat, white boots, and a hat.
And fabulous. Big glasses. And you're listening to Queer Voices.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Walensky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Bridget Strong.
And I'm Lee Moore.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the 3 weeks ending January 5th, 2008. Nepal's Supreme Court on December 21st ordered the government to pass new laws and rewrite old ones to extend equal rights and anti-discrimination protections to gay, lesbian, bisexual, transsexual, and intersex people. Current Nepalese law prohibits unnatural sex under penalty of up to 2 years in prison. The High Court ruling came in a public interest case filed by four queer advocacy groups. Lesbian, gay, bisexual, transsexual, and intersex are natural persons irrespective of their masculine and feminine gender, the court wrote, and they have the right to exercise their rights and live an independent life in society. Leading activist Sunil Pant of the Himalayan country's Blue Diamond Society noted that this is the first time ever any Supreme Court has spoken in such a positive manner about gender identity issues, while the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission said the ruling set a new standard for LGBTI rights around the world. court also ordered the government to form a committee to study same-gender marriage in other countries with a view to changing Nepali's law in that area, too.
Hungary's parliament passed a civil partnership law on December 17th. The Registered Partner Act grants spousal rights in areas that include joint tax filing, decision-making in health care, and inheritance, social security, and pension rights to same-gender couples or heterosexual couples who choose not to marry. The new law will not, however, allow same-gender couples to adopt or have access to fertility treatment, nor will it allow couples to share a common surname. Passage of the legislation was not a surprise. The bill was introduced by the left-of-center government in November over objections from the coalition's small Free Democratic Party that it did not go far enough. The law takes effect in January 2009.
And President Tabaré Vázquez signed a bill December 27th making Uruguay the first Latin American country to grant same-gender couples access to civil unions on a national level. The legislation, which passed the Senate in September and the House of Representatives in November, took effect on January 1st. Couples must have lived together for at least 5 years, however, before they can take advantage of the law, which grants spousal rights in areas that include inheritance, property ownership, pensions, parenting, and health care. The new law grants those rights to two people, whatever their sex, identity, orientation, or sexual option may be, who maintain an emotional relationship of a sexual nature and an exclusive, singular, stable, and permanent character without being united in matrimony.
Dozens of gay and lesbian couples entered into civil unions in the U.S. state of New Hampshire in the early morning hours of New Year's Day as a new law legalized those partnerships after midnight. Organizers said they counted 37 couples bundled up in below-freezing temperatures in the outdoor ceremony on the plaza of the New Hampshire State House. The law gives same-gender couples the same rights, responsibilities, and obligations of marriage in the state without calling the union a marriage. Civil unions or domestic partnerships, however, aren't recognized by the federal government or by most other states.
A U.S. federal judge issued an order on December 28th preventing a domestic partnership law in Oregon from going into effect as scheduled on January 1st. Opponents asked U.S. District Judge Michael W. Mosman to intervene. After the Oregon Secretary of State's office ruled in October that they had failed to collect enough valid signatures on a referendum petition to block the law. He scheduled a hearing for February 1st for lawyers to argue whether election officials wrongly threw out valid signatures that would have qualified the referendum. The measure includes benefits related to inheritance rights, child rearing and custody, joint state tax filings, joint health, auto, and homeowners insurance policies, and visitation rights at hospitals. There's likely to be an appeal, no matter how Judge Mosman rules in the case, effectively stalling the legislation from taking effect for at least several months. Hundreds of same-gender couples held protest vigils in Portland and at least six other Oregon cities this week to condemn the delay.
The California Supreme Court, however, has rejected a bid to overturn a law protecting same-gender domestic partners from increased property taxes when one of them dies and the other inherits the couple's home. The State Tax Board ruled in 2003 that domestic partners must be treated in the same way as married couples in property inheritance to ensure that a surviving partner wouldn't lose a home due to higher single-person taxes. The legislature made the rule law in 2005, but it was challenged by several Northern California property tax assessors who claimed that the provision violated the state's probate code and the family code. Last October, the California Court of Appeal upheld the law and dismissed the suit, saying that the legislature adopted the rule for domestic partners to guarantee equality for all Californians, regardless of gender or sexual orientation. With the high court's refusal to hear the case, no further appeals are possible. The issue of same-gender marriage is also before the Supreme Court of California. No date has been set for oral arguments in that case.
In Israel, only rabbis can perform marriages, but the city of Tel Aviv has agreed to recognize same-gender and intermarried couples as well as others not married by rabbis for municipal service and tax purposes. Tel Aviv will recognize partnership cards issued by New Family, a group working to overturn the rabbinate's stranglehold on marriage in the country. The wallet-sized cards are a formal document signed by the couple before a witnessing attorney that proves the relationship is legally binding under rules governing common law relationships. Estimates place the number of those couples as high as 40% of Israeli households, with some 18,000 same-gender couples and 250,000 couples that include at least one immigrant who is not Jewish and therefore cannot legally marry in Israel. Attorney Erit Rosenblum, founder and chair of New Family, told the Jerusalem Post that the move allows couples to transform their relationship from a normative one, a common law one, to a contractual one. While Tel Aviv City Councilman Etai Pincus said that the municipality has taken it upon itself to do everything in its power to grant equality. Two other cities have already done the same, and similar recognition is reportedly being considered elsewhere in Israel. Religious conservatives are threatening to introduce national legislation to ban such actions.
But bowing to papal pressure, the Rome City Council has rejected a domestic partners registry for same-gender and heterosexual couples. Registered couples would have been entitled to hospital visitation rights, family rates at city-run recreation centers, and other benefits controlled by the council. The Vatican has vehemently opposed any measures to legally recognize same-gender couples. Italy's center-left coalition government of Prime Minister Romano Prodi was expected to fulfill one of its campaign promises last year by establishing some form of legal recognition for same-gender couples nationally, which would grant them some economic benefits. But the ruling coalition's slim majority in parliament has put any such legislation on the back burner. Meanwhile, in his first public address of 2008, Pope Benedict XVI, for the umpteenth time, condemned queer couples, saying that legal recognition of any other than the union of one man and one woman threatens the very foundation of peace.
The very foundation of the global Anglican Communion seems to be crumbling. The 77-million-member Worldwide Church Consortium has been heading towards schism since the 2003 consecration of New Hampshire's openly gay and partnered V. Gene Robinson as a bishop in the U.S. branch, the Episcopal Church. That region's staunch support of Robinson and the blessing of same-gender couples in several U.S. churches and by some Canadian Anglicans have been vehemently opposed by leaders of the Communion's conservative regions, primarily in Africa, Asia, and Latin America, who cite biblical condemnation of homosexuality. Dozens of conservative parishes and one diocese have also left the U.S. Church over its queer-friendly positions, aligning themselves instead with Anglican provinces in Africa or South America. Reversing a previous announcement that would have allowed Robinson to attend the Communion's once-a-decade Lambeth Conference this July without voting privileges, the Communion's spiritual leader, Archbishop of Canterbury Rowan Williams, in late December disinvited Robinson and maintained his refusal to invite Martin Minns, who broke away from the Episcopal Church and was consecrated a bishop by the Church of Nigeria. Their leader, Archbishop Peter Akinola, has been the Communion's major anti-queer voice. Meanwhile, Anglican Archbishop Peter Jensen of Sydney, Australia, is leading an unofficial gathering of conservative bishops this June in Jerusalem, just a month before the Lambeth Conference is scheduled to begin. Several bishops, including Nigeria's Akinola, have threatened to boycott Lambeth if the rift over homosexuality is not resolved in their favor.
But finally, openly gay actor and LGBT rights activist Sir Ian McKellen, who became Britain's first openly gay knight in 1990, has been awarded another high accolade. He was named a Companion of Honor in the Queen's New Year's Honors List. The order has only 65 members. It was founded by King George V to recognize leaders in the arts, science, and industry. In announcing the honor, the palace hailed McKellen for his work as both an actor and a human rights activist. Best known for his roles in X-Men and The Lord of the Rings, McKellen is also a founding member of the British LGBT rights group Stonewall. I am honored to join an order which includes such distinguished practitioners in the arts, McKellen said in a statement. It is particularly pleasing that equality is included in my citation.
That's News Wrap for the 3 weeks ending January 5th, 2008, written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK, Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Lee Moore.
And I'm Bridget Strong.
And we will have more from This Way Out later in the program. This is Queer Voices.
And this is Jennifer Renee again.
And this is Brian Levinka.
And those of you out there who have served in the military, or maybe some that were discharged because they found out that you were gay, lesbian, or transgender, you wonder what your rights are. You wonder how is there someone out there that can help me from my community that knows who I am, that can help me navigate the difficulties in getting stuff from the veterans and knowing basically what your rights are. Well, there is such a group. It is the American Veterans for Equal Rights. That's AVER, AVER, maybe?
Yes, AVER.
Okay. We have Barbara Howard here, who is director. Can I call you that?
Well, actually, I'm the interim president of AVER here in Houston.
Okay.
We're getting our chapter started back up here, and we're looking to help any gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgendered veteran who needs help with hooking up with counseling or just talking with some old military buddies.
Well, one of the things in our brief conversation before we started the interview, you were saying that a lot of people who are veterans who are discharged honorably actually have rights and don't even know about it.
Yeah, that's correct. There's a lot of gay and lesbian, transgendered and bisexual veterans who do not know that they have any rights at all through the VA. Therefore, you know, they have earned all these medical rights and medical benefits, and they don't get access to that. So.
Is it because maybe they're afraid to go in, or is it because they just don't know?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think some of them are afraid to go in and talk to their physicians, their military physicians, about the fact that they are gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender, because there's a certain amount of discrimination out there in the military, obviously, because of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, that's pervasive.
So you're saying be proud, be gay, and go ask for your rights?
Get your benefits. You earned them. Yes. If anybody earned them, you did.
Absolutely.
When you talk about the prejudice at the VA, we're talking based about medical care right now, is there any recourse? Do they come to you and say something? Is there a recourse if they're mistreated?
They basically have the rights that every veteran has. So basically, you're going to have to be your own advocate for your rights, is what you're going to have to do. And I want to also say that this is not pervasive in the Houston VA system. We're talking in general across the country. There are certain people who do go into the VA who do identify certain discriminatory patterns within their local community VA hospital.
What's the difference with ours?
Well, most people that I've spoken with who are part of our organization already have had very good experiences there as a veteran. Some have accessed resources, some have not. But those that have had a pretty good experience from as far as we've been able to discern. But we don't have what I would call quantitative data at this point.
Okay. What about the other benefits, education?
Usually you will get your educational benefits. That's an automatic benefit that you get as a veteran. Housing, as far as your, what do they call it? You get a special grant. You're still entitled to that. But as a gay person, you would not be entitled to share that benefit with your spouse because you cannot be legally married.
Right. Well, I guess the question is that I'm trying to glean, because I don't know. I didn't have the honor of serving during the Vietnam War, but I was wondering, as far as the benefits that they're getting, are there any particulars that they don't know? Is it because, I guess the question is it because someone was discharged because they were gay? Is that the confusion?
Well, I think that a lot of people, some people who are discharged possibly walk in that cloud of shame that's associated with that and may not know that they have those benefits. Sometimes they're not told about those benefits when they leave. So as a veteran, it's important that you access your resources.
Okay.
Get on the internet. Find out what benefits that you get. Contact AVER. We'll help you out with that as well.
And y'all have a website, I see.
Yes, it's www.aver.us, and that's our national website.
Okay. Do y'all have a local website?
We're actually getting that off the ground. We're actually restarting the chapter here in Houston, which is one reason I'm here, to exactly. let everybody know about the chapter starting up.
When we have meetings coming up?
Actually, we have meetings the first Tuesday of every month at the West Gray Cafe at 7 p.m.
Oh, wow.
At night. This month we're going to have it actually next Tuesday because of the holiday.
Okay.
People are out of town during the
Got
holiday.
Got it. What can they expect if somebody gives you a call, contacts the email? What is it they can expect from you to help them in some way? Is it a service organization that's going to benefit them in the way you're going to help them navigate the treacherous shoals of getting their benefits?
Well, actually, we're working on getting the information together so we can actually put it. We're actually trying to start a MySpace page for the Houston chapter. And we're actually trying to get compile benefit information for the local community here. Where our group that's currently in meeting is in the process of doing that. So if you give us a call, we'll be able to actually give you some information orally through that communicative process. Also, we could probably send you an email with some additional information if you'd like. But we encourage people who would want to be part of AVER to come to the meetings and just kind of get that sense of camaraderie back that you may have missed or lost. You have gay and lesbian, bisexual, transgender military personnel there who you can connect with again and get that sense of camaraderie and work with us together to improve the life of veterans here in Houston for all of us who served who are gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender.
Are there any other organizations? Are you the only one? I know of TAVA is for transgender.
Correct.
Transgender Americans.
The gay, lesbian.
Well, AVER is the only one locally here in Houston. Originally, we were the Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, Transgender Veterans of America, and it morphed into AVER. As far as I know, we're the only Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, Transgender Veterans organization here in Houston. But if there's another one, if you guys want to contact us, that'd be great. I'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, I was going wondering if there was.
That'd be awesome.
Can you tell us how AVER started? And was it we mentioned Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Is this kind of before Don't Ask, Don't Tell, or did it come after that?
AVER started kind of in that process in between both of those.
Back in the glory days.
Back in the glory days. AVER basically took on the mission of Don't Ask, Don't Tell once that became the current military policy. Because it's affected a lot of people who served honorably, a lot of gay and lesbian, transgendered and bisexual people who really should still be in uniform,
yeah.
I think.
Especially in these days.
I'm sorry.
I was going to say, what's the numbers on how many people have we... How many people in this time when there's a crunch and many people in Iraq especially are having to do 3 and 4 tours because we don't have enough manpower? How many people have they sent home?
Well, since 1993 to 2005, which are the most current statistics that we have, there has been approximately 11,000 people kicked out under Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
That's amazing.
And of those, a lot of people in what are considered mission critical military occupational specialties, or MOSs as they were, medics, doctors, surgeons, Arab linguists. So it's
I've heard that the linguists, that the critical people that speak the language are being discharged from Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Right, and it makes absolutely no sense to us.
Okay, we can't find anybody, but let's get rid of the gay lesbians.
Right, and at the same time, they're lowering the standards for people to join the military.
Well, that doesn't. I guess I'm just sitting here shaking my head, and you can't hear me out there.
It really doesn't make any sense.
But that's just as amazing to me that the military is it just the good old boy Bubba system that exists?
Well, I think it's probably the most antiquated system as far as that kind of hierarchy and that good old boy mentality. I think that, you know, with the troops serving in Iraq, meeting people from NATO countries who serve openly as gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender, I think that the attitude, at least to the common service members, is changing. If that ratchets up to the hierarchy, hopefully so. I think it will eventually. I think Don't Ask, Don't Tell is probably going to be overturned in the next 5 years, especially with a change in leadership. I think that will come. I think, and I think us being in Iraq is going to push that process as well, because there's going to be a point at which you know, you're not going to want to lose a lot of your highly qualified people for a silly rule that doesn't make a lot of sense to a lot of people.
How is don't ask, don't tell perceived by the active military? I mean, what are their thoughts on that?
Well, from the most of the information that we can garner, your basic service people who are in the trenches, a lot of them don't really care.
Right.
You know,
right.
There are some that do, but a lot of them don't. There is definitely a generational mindset, you know, where the basic foot soldiers, a lot of them don't really care. Some of the some people do. Some of the hierarchy do. But there's some hierarchy that support us. I mean, recently, in January of 2007, the Joint Chiefs of Staff chairman under Bill Clinton basically said it's time to end Don't Ask, Don't Tell. He came out publicly and said that. There's been several high-ranking military officials who've come out and said that it's not Peter Pace, obviously.
No.
But there's been several that have come out and said that, hey, you know, we need to get rid of this.
And I think I've even heard Hillary come out against it, too.
Yes, she has.
Yeah.
Yeah, she says it was a transitional thing. It was something that...
I think at the time it was okay, it was acceptable, but things have changed since then, and I think our society has changed, and, you know, it's maybe time to move on to something a little bit more accepting.
Well, I think, too, that a lot of the service members, you know, them serving over there, are our National Guard people.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the discharge and a lot of the people, you know, National Guard was just sort of a thing you do once a month. And
well, right.
So a lot of GLBT people could be part of that,
yeah.
Serve. And there was never a problem until you get into a war zone or a war area.
You wind up in Iraq and you're like, oh my
suddenly,
gosh.
Suddenly there are people looking too close at you. But the fact is that the National Guard is every day, the guy next door, the people down the street. And so they're exposed to GLBT people on a regular basis.
That's correct.
So, well, let's hope that happens, and let's hope that the next administration looks at the Don't Ask, Don't Tell a little more favorably in doing away with it, in allowing all American citizens to be able to serve honorably in the military. I think it's interesting that they have sent a gay and lesbian person home who's a citizen, but yet... they have non-citizens serving in the military.
Anything better, you know, besides gay and lesbian? Now, Barbara, tell us about your experience. You were a medic.
Yeah, I was a medic in the military. I was in the military from 83 to 85.
Uh-huh.
Served at Fort Sam Houston, but I was kicked out of the military for being gay.
And this is before Don't Ask,
This is
Hotel.
Before Don't Ask,
This
Hotel.
Is they could come after you and...
That's right. I mean, basically, there was a witch hunt. We had a narc in our unit. They came after us, and about eight of us were kicked out at that time. All
really?
Women, by the
yeah.
way. Yeah.
And you were saying that women are disproportionately
well,
targeted?
That's correct. Under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, women make up, in the military, just for as a statistic, so about 15% of the military, but they're kicked out at the rate of 33% of all discharges.
Right.
So... the law basically affects women in a very negative way, yeah. obviously.
Well, let's get the information again. I don't want to... Let's leave. If
yeah,
you weren't
point.
Paying attention, get your pencil and paper
okay.
out so you can write this down.
Yeah, the website is www.aver.us. And let me give you my cell number if anybody wants to call to attend the meeting.
Brave.
Well, you know.
Courageous.
Hey, courageous.
You're a military.
I'm a military person. What can
yeah,
I say?
Yeah.
It's 281-686-1160. And that's usually the best way to get in touch so you can attend our meetings. But our meetings are the first Tuesday of the month, 7 o'clock, West Gray Cafe. This month in January, it will be next Tuesday on the 15th due to the holidays. So hopefully we'll see a lot of you guys there. That'd be great.
Well, I want to thank you. Barbara Howard, who is the interim president of AVER. Okay.
AVER.
The American Veterans for Equal Rights. This is Queer Voices.
Anyone who's experienced how challenging the high school years can be will relate to the words and music of our next guests, who will join us after we celebrate a true teen champion.
Jamie Nabosny stands up, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. In a landmark case in 1996, Wisconsin school officials agreed to pay nearly $1 million to settle a federal lawsuit on behalf of Jamie Nabosny. For years, Jamie suffered relentless verbal and physical abuse for being gay. He was spit on, held down, and urinated on, called a fag by a teacher, and frequently beaten. One time, he required abdominal surgery after being repeatedly kicked in the stomach in the school hallway. Despite numerous complaints from him and his parents, school officials failed to intervene. Jamie dropped out of school in the 11th grade. Hearing of continued harassment, he courageously filed suit. The federal court jury found school officials liable for failing to protect him. The case was significant. It forced school districts nationwide to protect all students from harassment and violence. As Jamie put it, school is a place for learning. All kids need to be treated alike. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, John Klein.
Every actor worth his salt strives to be honest and true in his portrayals on the stage or screen. Hello, this is Ian McKellen, and that's exactly what This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine, does as well, right here on this station.
Extra, extra, read all about it, extra.
Are you signed up for our emailed This Way Out updates? We send them out every few weeks, briefly reviewing recent and previewing upcoming programming and dishing some behind-the-scenes news about your favorite international LGBT radio show. We also send out weekly email messages describing the specific content of each program. All you have to do to receive one or both of these messages is email tworadio@aol.com. And be assured that we don't share or sell your email address or anything about you to anyone else, and we never will. Again, to receive the occasional This Way Out updates or our weekly program information messages, ask for one or both by name when you email tworadio@aol.com. That's tworadio@aol.com.
That sardonic old cliche of Catholic high school girls in trouble gets a gender switch and a tragic twist in the hit musical Bear. Composer Damon Introbartolo and lyricist John Hartmere tell the story of the ill-fated romance between two young Catholic school boys. This Way Out correspondents Dixie Trichel and John Townsend talked with Introbartolo about its genesis, the new CD-DVD release of the show, and the special mission it's dedicated to. But first, let's hear Matt Doyle and James Snyder in their roles as Peter and Jason singing the title song, Bear.
Remember the day that you met me? I swear it was yesterday. I knew with a glance that you were the question and you were the answer, that the world would make sense again if I held your hand. Someday you'll look back and I hope you'll remember the moment truth when I knew who I was. How did I learn the truth you gave to me? I will always remember the first stolen moment. There you were kissing me and time seemed to freeze. Now I stand at a crossroad and I stare at a question. If prayer were the answer, I'd fall on my knees. But forward calling, and I cannot stay here. A parting of souls as I try to move on. How do I forget the dream you shared with me? I have never been this bad.
I've never been so scared.
I've never felt such honesty.
That will never go away.
Secrets reveal. Here in a world where there's safety in falsehood, I have discovered the one thing that's real. That I love you, and I loved you from the start. And if you hold that close to you, we'll never be apart. We
about Bear the Musical and how you came about creating this.
Started 7 or 8 years ago in L.A. It's about this group of seniors in a Catholic boarding school in their last semester, the adventures they go on, and in the middle of all that, there is a relationship between Peter and Jason that they have to keep very secret because of the ensuing consequences that would happen and how they've been raised. So at the center of it are those two guys. It's an original work, so you can't hide behind the fact that it was done in the 1800s or 1900s. You can't soften the trajectory of the characters. Like, they have to play out this way in Catholicism in the year 2007 or whenever you do it. It just is wearing itself on its sleeve. So, and there's no kind of, like, faux intelligentsia behind it. It just is what it is. So no one really wanted to produce it, so then I became the producer along with Kristen Henge, Eric Anderson, and John Ottman. We followed the writing with actually mounting it. It ran for 7 to 8 months, and then other producers took it back east off Broadway.
The CD has just been released. It's a double CD set, and there's also a DVD with it that talks about the making of Bear.
We decided to make a record in conjunction with the release of the rights for people to produce the show themselves, which is happening now. It just opened in Chicago at the Bailiwick.
Tell us what the other characters are doing.
There's Nadia, who's Jason's sister, and she's very acerbic and fat, and she plays the cello. Ivy is this girl who likes to use her aesthetics for attention and gets tangled up with Jason that way. And then there's Lucas, who enforces this kind of rave culture on everybody, and they all have their individual personalities. It's like some of the orphans in Annie. They just are kind of there, but however important.
The title of the piece is Bear, B-A-R-E. Tell us about where that comes from.
The title came from John. I like that you could imagine that it was something before you got there. You didn't know quite what you were getting into. I realize that in this day and age, that's not really what people want. They want, like, as much information as possible. I guess I'm old-fashioned. I like a little mystery and a little enigmatic context. It's like the journey of the discovery.
Tell us about how you started writing the music.
I was starting to hear these conversations, these musical conversations in my head. There weren't words attached, but they were just sonic ideas. They were just bouncing back and forth, and I started to compose them, and then they grew, and I was like, God, I need some words. So my friend Debbie, who's also the orchestrator and producer of the album, hooked me up with John Hartmere, who wrote words to the tunes, and then they just kind of developed.
It is, quote, rock opera style. There's gospel, and there's ballads.
I kind of just wrote what fit the storytelling. In the age of iTunes, we love to compartmentalize music as much as possible. As the tunes and the stories informed me, so I just kind of churned them out.
What kind of reactions do you get from people?
It depends kind of where you are with it. Some people really resist it because it's not the most comfortable thing to sit through sometimes or listen to. It was never our intention to make it comfortable. That kind of defeats the purpose. So, you know, it's walking that line between what is a night at the theater and what is metaphor campfire you bring people around to tell a story with. And it's not necessarily a happy story, but passionate.
Yeah.
I mean, I've gotten my share of hate mail, certainly, about this show going too far because it's unapologetic in its context. But overall, I mean, the response is great. People dive into the album and they have their own kind of journey with it, and as the shows go up in different cities, they will have their own experiences with it, and you know, I'm thrilled that that's happening. It's very humbling and makes me feel very good.
Part of the proceeds from the CD of Bear is going to the Trevor Project.
Bear is indigenous to Los Angeles. Trevor Project is now based here. And many, many years ago, when the Los Angeles production, the executive director of Trevor Project came to the show, and I always felt a connection to that charity.
Tell us what it is.
Trevor Project is a not-for-profit group that provides a constant phone number for gay and lesbian kids call when they're in crisis about staying on the planet, about keeping their own lives. When I was younger, I call random numbers in San Francisco with the 415 area code and hope that someone would answer so that I could, like, just talk to someone. It didn't work out too well. I got, like, a lot of Chinese restaurants. I was reaching, and Trevor Project, you know, that number is always available to kids. Trevor Project was the most progressive and hands-on charity, and I just thought it would be a natural fit.
And there's specifically that connection because in Bear, the two lead characters, Jason and Peter, one of them does end up committing suicide.
I think a lot of the times when you're in the experience of watching the show, you want to rush the stage and make it stop, and you can't because it's in process and it's going to unfold, sadly. When you take on an original work and you don't have history to hide behind, you're taking on a different set of responsibilities and taking a bigger risk.
I know this world can have a place for us. If we just try to find a way to trust, then time will be kind. In a fantasy I dream awake, but reality is give and take. You take what you can, you give time a chance. We have to wait until the world is fast asleep. I'll wipe away the doubt and show you why we keep the best kept secret. The best kept secret of all. All I ever want is there in your eyes. They tell me I'm alright and I realize I always knew. We whisper words when we're alone at night. I wanna hear them in the morning light. And with love on our side, maybe we'd be alright. There cared. A thousand people saw us dancing there. You have to give the world a chance to what? To see how deep the world can cut. This is all a fantasy. Then we go back to school. Just think it through. I think it through and then you shut me out. You're such a coward and you're a fool. Can't go on forever this way. All this forever, can't you live for today? We have to grow up. There's so much more to love. It's best kept secret. The best kept secret. Best kept secret.
From Bear, that was Matt Doyle and James Snyder singing Best Kept Secret. Composer Damon Introvertolo spoke with Dixie Trichel and John Townsend about the musical. For more information about Bear, check out www.bearthealbum.com. The website for the teen hotline organization, The Trevor Project, is thetrevorproject.org.
Sammy Fromm, infamous psychology student, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. In the 1940s, a gay student named Sammy Fromm took a psychology class at UCLA, taught by Dr. Evelyn Hooker. Along the way, the two became friends. While in San Francisco over Thanksgiving, they shared a night on the town with Sammy's gay friends. Later that night, Sammy took Evelyn aside, saying, quote, "We've let you see us as we are, and now it is your scientific duty to make a study of people like us. We're homosexuals, but we don't need psychiatrists. We're not insane. We're not any of those things they say we are." Also encouraged by her colleagues, Evelyn began her landmark study. She turned the scientific community on its head, finding that gay men are psychologically indistinguishable from straight men. Through his good friend Evelyn, Sammy Fromm had at last revealed the truth to the whole world. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRAR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Dustin Richardson.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Bridget Strong, Lee Moore, Rex Watron with Bill Kelly, Sherry Lund, Judd Proctor and Brian Burns with John Klein, and Dixie Trichel and John Townsend contributed program material. You heard music from the musical Bear, performed by Matt Doyle and James Snyder, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Listen online to This Way Out exclusively at outinamerica.com. You can also click on the link at the top of our website, thiswayout.org. Most This Way Out operating expenses are funded by donations from our listeners. Thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep this program on the air. We can't go on without your support, and you can choose from some special CD thank you gifts, too. You can also subscribe to CDs or cassettes of our weekly programs there and bid on some terrific items at the Stonewall Society-sponsored online auction to benefit This Way Out at alternabid.com. Email us at tworadio@aol.com or write to Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KBOO, Portland, Oregon, CHSR, Fredericton, New Brunswick, WCRS, Columbus, Ohio, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
A quiet lad and smart. He seldom spoke and stayed alone, for fear was in his heart. He didn't know the how or why he felt the way he did. He only knew that he felt different from all the other kids. Every now and then, his father read to him. He loved this, so this special time when nightlight's glow was dim. Once upon a time it went, and with it went his fear. 'Cause he felt safe under blankets warm with his father's voice. So heard a tale about a brave and gentle man, a handsome prince who stirred him so as only magic can. Whenever after finally came, the boy sat up to say, I hope someday I find a prince who will save my day. His father's eyes began to change, a shadow crossed his face. The book was shut, the light turned off, good night was said in haste. And in the dark the boy lies still and listened to the wind, and he wondered why his father left without kissing him. As most boys do, he grew with time. The years went by with speed. His features strong and handsome, his eyes a grayish green. He made few friends and tried to love some girls along the way, but his heart stayed shut behind a wall. Why? He would not say. With him to manhood, the secret he kept inside, the wish he had to find his prince and love him till he died. Along with this, and just as strong, that burns him like a flame, there lives in him his father's gift, and this was shame.
dare. And so he goes about his days, a tale of endless aching nightmares. When he dreams in restless sleep, every once upon a while arrives the prince from long ago, and on his face a smile. To all the boys who now are men, whose love is shut inside, whose shame and fear betrayed your prince and made him go and hide, come out and meet your brothers here, and we, your soul, will lift and help you see your prince is good and loving him. Yes, loving him is a gift.
Dripping down his chin. carpeted bus, and the fumes of the bathroom are pulling my gut. But we're flying, we're flying to the beat of our own wings. We're flying on down the Neverlands beneath our skin. Doesn't know what I'm talking about. Who's never left home, who's never struck out to find a dream and a life of their own. Placing the clouds, a foundation of stone. Many precede and many will follow. A young girl's dream no longer hollow. It takes the shape of what it holds her, she hasn't yet. She needs wide open spaces, room to make her big mistakes. She needs new faces. She knows the high stakes.
Only 16 years of age.
And my thanks to J.D. Doyle for bringing us that medley of performers. Ruthie Foster, the Ginger Lay Band, Triana Hamlin, Amy Spiess, Lindsay Mack, Susan Gibson, Paige Lewis, Mary Cutrafello. Those were all performers at the Houston Women's Festival. And, of course, what you heard right there was studio recordings, but they were at this year's Women's Festival. And then before that, Matthew Cloran, The Prince, from his 2000 album, Finally Free. This is Queer Voices.
Before we leave, the Sundance Film Festival is coming up. They have a thing called a Queer Lounge, which is a list of more than 40 films with queer characters or themed queer with directors, et cetera, et cetera. If you're interested in that, it's queerlounge.org/films/alphabetical.php. Probably if you just go to Queer Lounge, you can find it.
Probably find it from there.
Probably a link.
And well, I want to reiterate, because the JD's music there, Queer Music Heritage, there's an article in Outsmart magazine interviewed JD and talking about his 100th show of Queer Music Heritage, and somewhat of a milestone, and a real dedication as an authority on queer music and queer history.
Absolutely. And JD also supplies all the music for us, since we don't know any better.
Well, I don't know any.
He has probably, JD probably has the largest collection of queer music in the world, of new stuff, old stuff, and he also contributes to audiophile on This Way Out.
Exactly. I have seen some of his shirts, and some of them are on the old vinyls.
Vinyl, what is that?
The 78s. You know, the ones. I can't believe that. I can't remember the way you.
That's okay. JD's still learning what an iPod is.
Hey, well, we're all like that. You know, it's a new world. It's a new world. And what else is going on, Jack?
Well, we talked about there's a Pride meeting tomorrow if you're interested in that. There's a number of things coming up as the year progresses. Certainly, you know, you and I can talk about politics all night long.
Oh, absolutely. But it looks like they're playing some music for us.
Yes. It's time to go. We want to thank our guests tonight, all of our guests, Steve Kirkland was here, who's running for judge.
Yeah.
David Elliott calling in from Washington.
And Barbara Howard with American Veterans for Equal Rights. And everyone else. You know, it was a good. We've got a good show next week. Tune in.
Next week we have Lily Roddy. She was going to be here New Year's Eve to give us her astrology forecast for 2008. Well, she was delayed, but she will be here next week to talk with Deborah Bell and with you, Jennifer.
Oh, I know.
And we will also have Jeff Reed, our political beat reporter, and he's going to be reporting on, guess what? What else? The presidential elections,
no
probably.
No kidding.
Really? Imagine somebody talking about that. You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Valensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Listeners support KPFT in many different ways. Some write checks and others use credit cards. But if you're spinning your wheels looking for a tax deduction, think about donating your working but unwanted car, motorcycle, boat, or truck to KPFT. You'll qualify for a tax deduction and at the same time take care of that unfinished business. To make a donation, call our toll-free vehicle donation hotline at 877-308-2408. We'll arrange for your vehicle to be picked up and the title transferred. Then we'll send you a receipt for your tax deduction. It's that simple to support the station you've come to rely on for alternative music, news, and public affairs programming. Again, for more information.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.